from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You in the presence of a king, scratch that. You in the presence of a god, put in the belly of the beast. I escape whenever I never had a job. Scott Boris, you over, baby. That's Crown from Jay-Z's new album Magna Carta Holy Grail, which is at the top of the Billboard 200 for a second week in a row. Jay-Z's got tremendous ambition and the platinum touch. He's on tour with Justin Timberlake, married to Beyonce, pals with President Obama, now a father. He's had a meteoric rise from crack dealer to rapper to music producer to full-fledged mogul. This hour on Point, Jay-Z, how he got to the top and what he stands for. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you a fan of Jay-Z, the artist, the businessman? What message do you take from his success, his story? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today from New York is Andrew Rice, contributing editor for New York Magazine. His latest piece is headlined, Oh, I'm So Good at Math, Lessons from the Jay-Z Business Model. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Andrew Rice in New York, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Philadelphia is James Braxton Peterson, director of Africana Studies and professor of English at Lehigh University, founder of Hip Hop Scholars, an association of academics who study hip hop. He's co-taught a course on Jay-Z at Georgetown with Michael Eric Dyson. The mogul is on the syllabus. James Braxton Peterson, welcome. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What puts this artist on a university syllabus that you're teaching? What puts this man in that spot, James Peterson?
Wow, that's actually a great place to start. I think where we can all, I think, find some consensus and agreement is on the fact that Jay-Z has sort of perfected the craft of rapping and rhyming. Obviously, this form has been around since about the mid-70s. It's gone through different developments and different eras. It's kind of hip-hop culture has kind of unfolded as the information era has unfolded. And so along with the sort of corollary technological developments and the differences in production styles, hip-hop has endured as American popular culture. And Jay-Z has, and we could debate about the content of his work, and okay, I think that's worth having a discussion. But the actual form of rapping, he's simply one of the best. And so when you take a look at his work, his use of prosody, his use of allusions, his rhyme schemes, his style, his braggadocio, yeah, all of those things situate him close to or at the top in terms of the ranking of MCs and different rap artists over the course of the history of hip-hop culture.
Andrew Rice, you take that on board, and you go right on to where Jay-Z has often gone right on to business. I mean, quoting his own lyrics at the top of your story from Diamonds from Sierra Leone, where he says, I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. This is a full-fledged mogul. Yeah, he's got prosody, maybe. He can rap, but he can also do business, and it just gets bigger and bigger, Andrew.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I was, I was thinking that he would be an equally fine subject matter for a business school course. And in fact, he's been, as I cited in the article, he was he was the subject of a Harvard Business School study, actually, the promotional process for a book he put out called Decoded. So in a way, he has not only a great deal to offer scholars of poetry and music, but also people who are looking for lessons on how to make money off of music, which is an increasingly difficult thing to do these days.
Make money off of music and much more, actually. I mean, you look down the list of products he's been involved in endorsing, and you've got, the Bing search engine, and Budweiser, and Chrysler, and Duracell, and Hewlett-Packard, and Reebok, and the latest. Tell us the story of how he had a million of his new album out there with money paid for them in public before it was even released, Andrew.
Well, this is, I mean, I was writing the article and I had heard some rumblings and rumors about it. But, just like everyone else in America, I was taken by surprise when during game 5 of the NBA Finals, all of a sudden a 3-minute commercial, which is like the, Lawrence of Arabia of commercials, comes on and yeah, and showing Jay-Z sitting around in the studio with a Mount Rushmore of hip hop producers. sitting around talking, you know, vaguely about music and life and so on. And at the very end of the commercial, just for a very brief moment, the word Samsung Galaxy appeared on the screen. And basically what happened is if you went to the website you're directed to, you found out that if you owned a Samsung phone or tablet, you could download an app. That app would give you kind of clues to the nature of the songs, the lyrics, and so on, and then ultimately would give you a free copy of the album. The benefit for Jay-Z of this deal was that that Samsung bought 5 million copies of the or 1 million copies of the album at $5 a piece.
Yeah.
So it gave him $5 million. He basically broke even, one analyst told me, you know, on the cost of producing the album before he even put the thing out. And then the promotion, you know, Samsung basically paid for a gigantic promotional campaign that helped to push the album to the top of the Billboard charts where it is now.
Here's a little bit from that ad. During the NBA Finals, Jay-Z in the commercial appears as he announces the release of his new album, Magna Carta Holy Grail.
Do you know when it's coming out?
We put the album out on July 4th. We don't have any rules. Everyone's trying to figure it out. That's why the internet is like the Wild West. The Wild, Wild West. We need to write the new rules.
Writing the new rules, and you've got a million copies of the album out there paid for by a big company before it even hits the streets. James Peterson, can you please explain what is it about this artist, this businessman, that makes it worth millions and millions to Samsung to have an association with him to sell their telephone? What's the magic? What's the dynamic here?
It's a great question. You know, Samsung, multinational corporation, not necessarily hurting for sales. But what Jay-Z has done, and Andrew has pointed this out in his great article, over the course of time, Jay-Z has positioned himself at the kind of cutting edge, at the vanguard of what's cool. It started off just being kind of like what's inner city urban cool or what's drug dealer chic type of coolness. And then he kind of expanded that into broader sort of sets of Black popular culture, including like film and other aspects of Black popular culture. But at this point, his sights have been set on Americana more broadly conceived, and he's kind of situated himself at the top of popular American culture. And he's done that not just through the music, but through all the different sort of brand influencer opportunities that he's had with all the brands you listed, plus some of his own brands like Rockaware and Rockefeller. I mean, he's done it with his own brands as well as with other brands. And the important piece about this Samsung deal is that the album got earlier to his specific listeners. That 3 or 4 day lead time is very, very important. It's not just about getting the album in advance. It's about being the cool people who have the cool phone to get the cool album in advance. And that's the kind of currency that Jay-Z's business persona and his artistic persona have sort of crafted over the course of time. He is, as a pop cultural figure, he really thrives right at the intersection of art and commerce. And that goes from everything that he does in terms of marketing and promotions to the actual music and the content of the music itself.
Andrew Rice, how do you describe what it is he's selling at this point? I mean, here he is. He hangs with, you know, President and First Lady, with corporate kings. Warren Buffett, we'll hear that. I mean, he's got the queen of pop culture, Beyonce, in his arm. When Samsung wants that association with Jay-Z, what is it that they want? Is it the gangsta story that's, you know, that he talks about plenty? Is it the super businessman story? Is it the surprise of, hey, there's the African-American mogul who's making it all happen? What is it?
Well, I mean, I think that the gangsta story has, for a very long time, you could even make the argument from the very beginning of his career, has been sort of in his rearview mirror. I mean, his music has always been about making a transition from one life to a very different type of life. I mean, I'm not an expert on the music, but as a listener and as a close listener of his music in the course of doing this article, you know, I think that he never was. You know, he was never rapping about violence in the same way that, you know, NWA was or you know, other acts.
But
like
he's
that.
Rapping. I mean, look back there, from the dope spot with the smoke Glock fleeing from the murder scene. You know me well. I don't know how much that he's claiming for himself, but he touched that stone.
Sure. I think it's been very clear. I mean, I think at this point, the brand association that a company like Samsung is getting is not with that. It's with, you know, Jay-Z's brand is really about being very good at branding. So what Samsung buys with the association with Jay-Z is like, well, The world knows, Jay-Z's fans and everyone else knows, if Jay-Z is associating himself with Samsung, then this must be a company that has a similarly kind of canny approach to business. And I think that, you know, the genius of his as a businessman, if not necessarily as an artist, is that he's been able to make it so that selling out is not just like the culmination of his work, but actually the subject of his work.
Andrew Rice with New York Magazine, please stand by there. James Peterson at Lehigh University, great to have you both. We're talking about a great big cultural icon at this point, Jay-Z. You can look at him in a lot of ways. We're going to do that this hour. Do you know Jay-Z's story? Can you listen to his music and not know it? Crack dealer up from the projects, turned gold-plated, platinum mogul, power player. What do you think of it? What's the moral of the story of Jay-Z? What's the message? 800-423-8255. Here's Somewhere in America from Magna Carta Holy Grail. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Me and soul before the album drop. White lessons before I had a deal. X1B about me. This ain't no snapback again, but then trill. By the way, man, you ain't gotta count it, my nigga. I can add 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 20 million. Oh, I'm so good at math. Might crash your internet. And I ain't even into that. When I was talking Instagram, last thing you wanted was your picture snap. Fed still lurking. They see I'm still putting work in. Cause somewhere in America, Miley Cyrus is still twerking. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a ain't one. I got the rap patrol on the patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Jay-Z, rapper, businessman, mogul, icon, Mr. Beyonce. How he got there, what he stands for. James Peterson joins us, director of Africana Studies, professor of English at Lehigh College. Andrew Rice is here from New York, contributing editor for New York Magazine, with a great big piece there on the business side, the business empire of Jay-Z. It's headlined, "Oh, I'm So Good at Math, Lessons from the Jay-Z Business Model." You can join us this hour. What's the moral of the Jay-Z story? What's the message? Have you bought the latest album, Magna Carta Holy Grail? Why? What do you hear? And what does this icon say to the country, say to youth, say to African-American youth? Jay-Z, 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Jennifer in Boston. Jennifer, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I just wanted to call and give my two cents on Jay-Z. I'm a female in my late 20s. I've been a huge fan of Jay-Z since probably the late 90s. And I just feel that he's a brilliant artist who speaks to sort of a wide variety of his consumers. So he kind of introduces, like, much like the Magna Carta, in a very sort of intriguing way. So I remember it was July 4th when the album came out,
yeah.
Samsung users, and all of us sort of waited, and we could not wait for this release, and it was almost a sense of anticipation. He always keeps himself relevant and exciting, and that's sort of what, you know, his fans look to him to sort of do for us.
What is the heart of that excitement? Is it a business story that you're following? I mean, on there he's bragging, you know, we heard as we went on to the last segment, sold 1 million copies before it even came out, you know, Miley Cyrus is twerking about it, she can't believe how great I am. Is it his business success that moves you to like it, Jennifer, or what?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can tell that every single song on that album, he had spent, you know, months and months carefully crafting every single piece, and he always tells a story, and here we are as fans, and it's very exciting because he sort of lets you into his world. You know, he started from the bottom and now he's at the top, and you know, it's very inspiring for us.
It's amazing. Like Gatsby is a hip-hop artist, and his listeners, in your case, Jennifer, just loving it on the way up, and even when he's up there. Let me get one more. Thank you, Jennifer. One more here. New Orleans. Shelley's calling. Shelley, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
I, as a young African-American woman, I really admire his success and his wonderful craft, Jay-Z, but I do not appreciate his lack of humility in his songs. and he is really placing himself on this huge pedestal and showing teenagers, which is a huge bulk of his audience, that that's okay to do.
What do you mean lack of humility? He only called himself a king and a god.
Hey, that's all, right? You know,
Tom, can I get in here?
Yeah, absolutely. But before you do, explain that, Shelley. I mean, some might say, hey, it may not all be, you know, apple pie, but this puts a model out there of somebody who's driven to the top, and that's not the worst thing for young people. What do you say to that, Shelley?
Absolutely. He has earned the right to give himself some credit, but he didn't do it all by himself.
Yep.
He gives no credit to God. So, I mean, he's putting himself in God's place. That's what I feel.
A lack of humility raises concern there in New Orleans. What do you say to it, James Peterson?
Well, first to the first caller, I just want to correct this. He actually did not spend months and months crafting this album. There were a couple of songs that he had completed around the time in which he completed Watch the Throne, which was his first full-length album with Kanye West. Mm-hmm. But many of these other songs he essentially recorded in about 2 to 3 weeks. And that's not – I'm not bragging
that's
on him.
Good
I'm just saying that that's kind of what his process is. Just so it's not some kind of long, drawn-out artistic process. He really is gifted enough to get in there and get what he wants out of the studio, and I think that's commendable. To the second caller, I think she starts to raise an important point, because my sense of what Jay-Z's branded is probably a little bit darker than what you and Andrew were discussing earlier on, which is to say that he's extremely well-gifted at sort of holding forth on this model of what capital accumulation looks like in the 21st century. And so we're in this era where inequality is expanding and where we're struggling with the Democratic Party and with progressives to understand what that means. What does it mean in this kind of late global capitalist system where inequality expands even as we sort of reach certain benchmarks in our society? And I think Jay-Z is a sort of model in that particular moment where capital accumulation can still be aspirational because of where he's come from and how he articulates it. And even though he's a singular figure, he is sort of still a kind of a man amongst the people in certain ways. And so he's able to sort of walk a very, very thin line where he can still, be aspirational and inspiring to some folk. But I think we should still challenge him both on the sort of ethos of capital accumulation in this particular moment and moving from away from charity. He talks a lot about charity, but I don't hear him talking so much about justice. Right. So we should push him there and think very, very critically about that. I think the second caller is right that we have to be careful about who's listening to Jay-Z and when they're listening to him. I don't think that most of his fans are teens, by the way. I'm sure that he has a lot of teenage fans, but Jay-Z's audience is getting older. And those of us who have been following him for a long time, for instance, understand that Miley Cyrus sort of shout out in a very, very different way. There's a whole context and story and forth between him and Miley Cyrus. Well, Miley Cyrus talked about partying to a Jay-Z song in one of her songs, and then she sort of leaked out the fact that she never really listened to Jay-Z, and he kind of chastised her a little bit for that.
But isn't he saying there, "Eat my dust, I'm so far ahead of you"? Isn't that part of the message?
What he's saying is that Miley Cyrus is sort of a stand-in for every young white girl across this nation who might be dancing or twerking to a Jay-Z song. It's him bragging about his impact and his capacity to earn in this particular industry within the context of this exchange that he's had with Miley Cyrus over the last couple of years.
What a time we live in when the artist's message is bragging on his ability to accumulate capital. I mean, there's been a lot of bling forever, but with Jay-Z, it's beyond that. This is, you know, I'm building an empire. I am a mogul. Eric in Lincoln, Illinois. Eric, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I've got a question regarding whether you have any comments about Jay-Z's action with Samsung, Samsung's purchase of 1 million copies of the album is going to have any effect on how sales are recorded. This is something that's been debated hotly in the music industry, whether, you know, because Samsung bought a million copies, you know, people are saying that it's already going platinum. But, for example, to me, that's no different than, Walmart purchasing a couple billion boxes of Raisin Bran without actually people deciding to buy that. And so my question is whether the participants have any thoughts on whether this is going to affect how sales are handled in
how they're recorded, how they're toted up. Eric, we've got it. I mean, here you've got Samsung, they want the association so they get a million of these out there. People can get engaged with them. Samsung, I guess, online, Andrew Rice. And if they did that, then they could get an early copy of this. Of course, that also makes, that's a billion, I suppose, email or a million email addresses that Jay-Z will no doubt get his hands on. But how are the numbers recorded? Do they count toward his album sales, Andrew?
Well, it's a bit of an esoteric argument, and I think it it reflects a broader issue. But to the specifics of it, basically, it counted a couple of different organizations' track sales. It ended up counting towards what it's called the platinum status, right? So those million sales made it. The organization that certifies albums platinum said that those million sales would count. Billboard, which does the Billboard music charts. Said those million sales will not count because they are, because they're a promotion, not a not people going out and buying the albums. The people themselves are getting them for free at Samsung that's paying for them. I think that the broader issue that this points up is that music has been going through for a decade or more real kind of upheaval in terms of how its product is distributed. And these things like counting album sales, I mean, when was the last time you or anyone else bought an actual physical album? It's in a way kind of an archaic sort of measure.
Yeah, but people are paying for something digital here, and are curious.
It is. And it's quite different from the Walmart example here as well, because
Raisin
people,
Brand.
Yeah, the Raisin Brand example, simply because you had to opt into this, right? And a lot of people obviously did because they crashed the server that supported the app on the July 4th. Everyone was trying to download this. But Andrew is right. There are some aspects of the industry that are trying to count this, others that are not. But at the end of the day, the music industry model has undergone several paradigmatic shifts over the last, I don't say 10 to 15 years. And it's interesting that Jay-Z, who's kind of positioned himself as someone on the cutting edge of not just technology and fashion and aesthetics more broadly conceived, he's also sort of trying to push the envelope for how music gets distributed, marketed, and promoted. And I would argue that he's done so successfully here, whether we like the album or not, or whether we like Jay-Z or not, this was a successful business move.
The man makes money, a marketing deal here, gets a million copies out, and before it even really comes out, he's got a song in there bragging on crashing those servers. And who does he hang with? Well, here's just a little sample. This is the President of the United States, an interview with Cleveland Radio Z107.9 last year, President Obama, describing his personal relationship with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
They're good friends, and obviously they're unbelievably successful, but they really are down to earth folks. And, we talk about the same things that I talk about with all my friends.
Hanging with the president. He raised a lot of money for the president's reelection campaign. We've seen the photograph of Jay-Z hanging out in the Situation Room, the same one the president was in when they went after Osama bin Laden. Here's a 2010 interview with Steve Forbes, chairman, editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. Jay-Z appears beside capitalist icon Warren Buffett. Jay-Z and Warren Buffett here comparing success strategies. Here's Buffett.
I think in business, one of the biggest things is to open yourself up for change. You don't have to change who you are and how you operate, but just, if the landscape has changed, then the way we do business has to change somewhat. We don't have to change who we are. We have to change the way we go about it.
Okay, I know. That's Jay-Z, not Buffett. But sitting there right next to Warren Buffett, and of course, there is the mother of the child, Beyonce, partner in life here in February, telling Oprah that her husband since 2008, Jay-Z, contributes a lot to her own success.
I would not be the woman I am if I did not go home to that man. Mm. And it just gives me such a foundation.
Hanging out with a pretty high crowd. And here he is from the new album, Open Letter, talking about Boy from the Hood, but with White House clearance.
Boy from the hood, but got White House clearance. Woo! Sorry, y'all, I don't agree with y'all parents. Uh-uh. Politicians never did shit for me. Nope. Except lied to me to start history. Woo! Wanna give me jail time and a fine. Fine, let me commit a real crime. Sure. I might buy a kilo for cheap beef. Out of spite, I just might flood these streets. Hear the freedom in my speech. Got an onion from Universal, read it and weep. Would've bought the nest of Brooklyn for free. except I made millions off of you. Weep. I still own the building. I'm still.
And there's the whole story of the arena in Brooklyn. Tom in North Hollywood, California. Thanks for calling, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. First off, I want to say I am a huge, huge fan of Dr. James Peterson, as you probably know from Twitter.
You and a lot of others, yes, indeed. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, that's how I'm following him today. And anyway, my whole point is that, first off, I think Jay-Z is a brilliant mogul, just like I guess you would say Madonna was or is.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of controversy and everything like that. But the problem I have is I tried to, you know, listen to his new CD, and almost every other word was the N-word. And for me, it's bringing about confusion. I know that, you know, the mean is that, you know, some people can use the word, some people can't, some people can say it with an A, some people can't. And my thing is that it brings in all of the negative stereotypes of what people are seen with racism being into the fabric of our society. It promotes and it propagates that stereotype going along with it. And, you know, you have a bunch of white kids listening to the music as well.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, they're using that word around and stuff. And I just think that somebody as high profile as him, you know, could be saying the same things that he's saying, you know, in terms of anger, injustice, all of those different things without having to use, you know, the N-word. I get confused by it, you know, and I know, you know, talking with a lot of other people, that's the part that gets confusing to me.
It has been a fascinating linguistic issue for a long time, and there it is still with Jay-Z right now. Tom, I appreciate your call from North Hollywood. James Peterson, there's a fan, but he doesn't get this piece. Speak to it.
Well, this is, and I appreciate Tom's support. This is complicated. We could do a whole show on this, Tom, as you know. Here's what I would say. I've done a lot of talking about this and writing about it. I think that this is a sort of particular word. I'm not interested in censoring any artists, by the way, but I do want artists to understand the historical significance and import of this word. Certainly within certain private speech communities, black speech communities or racist communities, the term is used often and used in different ways that it sort of exists outside of its traditional definitions. All of that is okay. But once you put it on a record, I think Tom is right. It engenders all of its historical sort of weight. And that's what makes it so complex. So, but instead of trying to censor it or instead of trying to bury the word, I'm much more interested in raising critical awareness around it and how it gets used. And I think it would be great if artists could spend a little bit more time thinking more critically about how and when it gets used. And if what Tom should understand, which is something that I've got to understand as well, is that the word doesn't play the same for each generation. So there are younger people who might be listening to Jay-Z's album and they kind of interpret it a little bit differently than older folk do. Folk who are older than I am interpret it differently. Remember,
what does it mean to that set, though? Does it mean whatever it takes? Does it mean pride in spite of a hardship?
I think that for younger people, sometimes they disassociate or divorce the term from its historical legacy. And what I would challenge them to do is not to do that. I'm not saying that you can't have linguistic felicity, that it can't mean different things in different contexts, but that only works in private speech communities. Once you put it in public, you put it on a record, you cannot divorce it from its historical context, and that's where it gets complicated.
It is out there plenty, and the man singing it, a great big icon. We're looking at the meaning, the message of Jay-Z. James Braxton Peterson is with us. Andrew Rice from New York Magazine. Listeners, you can join us with hedge fund guys going to jail for insider trading. Can Jay-Z be forgiven his brushes with the law, his dealer days? What does he stand for to you? 800-423-8255. Here's Diamonds from Sierra Leone with Kanye West and Jay-Z. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The name is mine. I'll take blame for that. The pressure's on, but guess who ain't gonna crack? Pardon me, I had to laugh at that. How could you falter when you're the rock with your balls? I had to get off the boat so I could walk on water. This ain't no tall order, this is nothing to me. Difficult takes a day, impossible takes a week. I do this in my sleep. I'm guessing I could sell CDs. I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. Let me handle my business, damn. I'm young.
Welcome to Havana. Smoking Cubanos with Castro and Cabanas. Viva Mexico. Cubano, Dominicano, all the plugs that I know. Driving Benz.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Jay-Z, rapper, businessman, mogul, icon, Mr. Beyonce, how he got there, what he stands for. Andrew Rice is with us, contributing editor for New York Magazine. He put together a terrific piece on the range, sort of a wild dynamics of Jay-Z's very deep at this point business career, way beyond the rap. It's in New York Magazine. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Joins us from New York, James Braxton Peterson is with us from Philadelphia, director of Africana Studies, professor at Lehigh University. And you are welcome right here. Where do you see this mogul going? What do you see him standing for? What's the message in Jay-Z to you, to you name it? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALKING. Just a really big range of comments online here. James Peterson, Andrew Rice. You know, John says, nouveau riche bragging and marketing make boring art. Okay. Queen Cupcake says, drug dealer chic, blech. You got a whole lot of people who are high on Jay-Z here. Really, really like it. But then, you know, you got a lot of questions, too. Here, Joe writes, never mind his roots, he can create crossover. He can cross over and be accepted by the ruling class because of his success. $$. He's the poster child for neoliberalism. Crass, in-your-face product, but he played, y'all, writes Joe. And one more, Elizabeth writes, she says, Eugene Robinson, who writes, of course, for the Washington Post, has a great name for these unprecedented African-American superstars, calls them the transcendent class. What he means is that they have succeeded to a level that they have to be taken seriously as permanent social forces transcending racist categories. But Elizabeth writes, I can't help cynically wondering if Jay-Z could get a cab in sweats by himself late at night in a middle-class neighborhood.
Great question.
Yeah, how transcendent even now?
Yeah, the answer is no to that. No, and Jay-Z speaks about this himself, you know, about the ways in which his neighbors in his own building were very, very reluctant when he moved in. And he raps about it a little bit, talking about blue bloods looking down on him and trying to clown him and things like that. So he experiences racism. It's quite a bit different than the kind of structural racism that young black men from his community experience on a day-to-day piece. And I think there are a couple of really complicated things. I appreciate the callers and the online folks' criticism because I think we need to critically engage Jay-Z. I think he welcomes that, but I think that's important. So we need to understand, number one, capital accumulation might be popular, might be popular to rhyme about, but we can't ignore the inequality and the experiences of those folk that are still suffering from social injustices in the community out of which Jay-Z emerged. And I think we have to really challenge him to stay rooted in that set of experiences as opposed to all the highfalutin artistry and all that. That's not to take away from his great gifts, but if you look at the exchange between him and Harry Belafonte, to me, that was really disappointing in the sense that I wanted Jay-Z to respond to Mr. Belafonte with the kind of respect that I think Mr. Belafonte
and describe that exchange, James.
So Harry Belafonte called Jay-Z out. And Beyonce, actually, basically for not doing enough, not being convicted enough to the social justice project. Beyonce responded by kind of listing the kinds of things that she does. But Jay-Z is very much invested in this sort of concept of anonymous charity. So he's given a lot to different causes, and he does so in a lot of times anonymously. I think what I'd love to see him talk about is the difference between charity and justice, right? Because you can be extremely wealthy and you can give to certain causes, and that might make you feel good, and that might help a lot of different situations, but there's also the issues around social justice. You know, how do we get sentencing disparities around crack cocaine, which you used to hustle? How do we get that to be realized in the criminal justice system right now? How do we work to get jobs in the community out of which you emerged? And I think that sort of concept of transcendence just doesn't work in any way because Jay-Z is still going to experience certain forms of elite racism and elitism in the kind of communities he's in. And we as his listeners and constituents have to continue to push him and challenge him. And it's not about necessarily changing his music or making his music all about social justice, although that would be great for me.
Yeah.
I think it's more about helping our artists to understand that they can play a very, very important role in the sort of range of social justice efforts that are going on. And you know, you can see some of that with Jay right now as he's trying to work with athletes and different artists in terms of their own careers.
I want to look at that, but I have to say, I mean, it's not like you're going to school Jay-Z on the need for social justice. This man is no nobody's fool. He knows what's out there. But, and let me put this to you, Andrew Rice. I mean, your story and many others say, look, what this guy cares about above all is the money. He is there to make the money, the focus. It's a hyper focus. I mean, what, they trademarked their daughter's name, Blue Ivy Carter, you write, and remind us, Andrew.
Yeah.
The focus, well, do you buy the anonymous charity piece of this? The maybe someday he'll come to social justice? Is that even his thing?
Well, I definitely believe that if Jay-Z was going to do charity, he might very well do it anonymously. He happens to be extremely private about many things that he does. Notwithstanding his music, it's a bit of a contradiction. But when it comes to his personal life and especially his money, he's extraordinarily private. He was not willing to talk to me about it, for instance. I would say that one thing that's interesting that, you know, when James was talking about sentencing disparities, it's interesting. There's an individual I wrote about a little bit in my story because I think he's a bit symbolic of this. An individual named Emery Jones, who was seemingly one of Jay-Z's associates when he was by his own claims dealing drugs. Down in Maryland, and this individual has been mentioned in his songs quite a few times.
Yep.
There's a song where he had started with a recording of a collect call, and he told him, you know, how good things were going to be when he finally got out of jail. This individual, Emery Jones, eventually did get a sentencing reduction because of the Supreme Court decision about disparities in crack cocaine sentences, and when he came out, Jay-Z reportedly sent his Maybach to pick him up.
Super luxury sedan. I mean, over the moon. But is that social justice or sympathy, or is that just – that sounds like something out of The Godfather. You know, you send a limo for Vito when he gets out.
Well, there's a line in the latest album where he says, "Welcome home to Emery. Let's get back to the dinero." So in a way, like
– i.e. moolah, money.
The message – that Jay-Z's message is the best revenge or the best kind of social justice is redressing economic injustice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, you can argue whether that's really the right way to go about
it or not. It's very practical.
That's what Jay-Z would probably tell us, is the best revenge is becoming very rich.
Let me go to Linda in Central Falls, Rhode Island. Hi, Linda. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love Jay-Z's music. To be honest, I haven't listened to anything past, you know, 2000.
Okay.
But I want to commemorate him for all his accomplishments that he's had in his life. However, as an African American, you know, like one of your guests was saying, you know, he hasn't been involved in the social justice. He's come from nothing to something, but he hasn't spoken about helping the people that. You know, I don't want to say he left them behind, but the people that are left behind.
Is it enough just to get so big, Linda? Is it enough just to say, not to say anything about it, just be a super success and let that kind of be a message? Is that enough?
It's not enough. I mean, people like Mitt Romney, who said you can borrow money from your parents to create a business. Not everybody's going to be as successful as that. And so I would say that the best way to impact society would be to talk about these injustices so that when their children grow up, that they can have a better life. They can have a better society to grow up in.
Interesting to see if he really goes down that path. Forgive me. I want to get a couple more here, Linda.
Okay.
And James. Dwayne. Thank you, Linda. Dwayne in New Orleans. Dwayne, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Dwayne. You're on the air.
How are you?
Very well.
You know, we spoke about social injustice. That's what the last caller was talking about.
Yes.
J.C. and the whole rap industry was built off of social injustice. And it's ironic that they could allow themselves to be manipulated and emasculated by this particular system that they first spoke out against.
You think Jay-Z's been emasculated? I mean, he looks pretty large and in charge, if that's one definition of the opposite.
Because he has money, Tom?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's master of his own fate. Isn't that kind of part of the way people think
of... I don't think he's the master of his own feet.
Okay.
You know why I don't think so?
Why?
Because all of those brands that he pretty much promotes, that they use him to promote, you know, it's all about somebody else.
Yeah.
When you really look at it, he's not in control. You know, the $5 million that he got off of this production, so-called, of this album,
yep.
How many people has he exploited? music industry? How many people does he have on his label?
Hey, Dwayne, you're breaking up on us, but we've got it here. Sort of who's using whom here? Who's the boss? I appreciate your call. One more, Rashad in Burlington, Vermont. Rashad, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom? How you doing, James? Really great to talk to y'all. Great show as always. James, just got a question for you. I'm a scholar as well, and I've been thinking about Jay-Z and thinking about rap music a lot. And I just have a question I just want to throw out and get your thoughts. I think one of the things that makes Jay so interesting and such a popular rapper was his ability to paint a picture of Black urban life during the Reagan era. And James, you know, he writes about this in his music. He's had several lines where he talks about that. And I think what's unique about his reading of Black life during the Reagan era is he was able to do it in a way that was, you know, powerful. It really came across well. It offered some kind of insight, but ultimately it was aesthetically pleasing. And I think his ability to combine those three elements really separated him from people like, you know, the late Biggie and Tupac, who were wonderful MCs, or people like Nas, but they didn't put all those pieces together. They were great MCs. They were thoughtful. They were insightful. They were charismatic, especially, you know, the late Tupac. But they weren't able to sort of bring things together in the way that Jay-Z was. And I think he also, and I think what also makes him interesting is his ability to draw on the narrative of sort of upward mobility in the United States. And I think all of those things combined really sort of separate Jay-Z from rappers in the sort of post-Reagan era. And he effectively has sort of created the platform by which other MCs are trying to copy.
Rashad, I appreciate your call. James Peterson, I hear you chomping at the bit.
I am. Well, I think Rashad is right. You know, Jay-Z has a great line on American Gangster where he says, blame Reagan for making me into a monster, right? And he talks about Iran-Contra and all the sort of circumstances around the U.S. drug trade as it's tied to the geopolitical sort of foreign affairs of the United States government. And to the first caller, Jay-Z does talk about social injustice in his music. It's not the stuff you're going to hear on the radio. These are album cuts, and he does do a lot of work. I'm not criticizing him in terms of what he does. I'm challenging him to think about doing something different. And let's be very, very clear here. Jay-Z, and he said this in a most recent interview with Elliot Wilson on Rap Radar and Life and Times, he believes that his existence is charity. He believes that the fact that he survived the circumstances that he survived, that he is now in the spaces and places where he is and making the moves that he makes now, is in itself a certain form of charity.
For whom? Certainly for his bank account.
Charity in terms of him representing the set of experiences of underrepresented and underserved, mostly black men in the inner city. Now, the problem with that, and this is where I want to challenge Jay, is charity is one thing. Charity is about what you're willing to give and what gifts you bring to the table for those who are in need. But many of us are now also interested, and always have been really, in the conversation about social justice. Justice is about systematic equality. It's not about what you give when you can and what you think and how you choose to give. It's about justice for all. And so this is why it's very, very important for us to pay attention to what Jay-Z is doing in terms of the whole a sports agency piece, because his philosophy behind that is he's seen young athletes sign these contracts and end up broken 4 to 5 years.
And we should clarify, he is now moving in that direction to get into sports agency. He's got the sports agency world freaked out because he's moving into it.
And as Andrew could point out for you, this is not the most lucrative business foray for Jay-Z. He's actually doing this because he wants to work with these artists to do some financial management. Now, to me, there's a big difference between him giving $1 million to the Survivor of Columbine versus him using his business acumen to try to help black athletes to manage their funds post career. That's the difference between charity and justice.
Standing there tall and proud as the businessman. Hey, I want to play one clip and get your 2 cents on it, Andrew Rice. This is the third night of concerts at Barclays Center in Brooklyn last fall. Jay-Z here responding in the middle of his concert to an article in the New York Times. He famously was a co-owner, but the Times had reported he only owned 1/15 of 1% of the Brooklyn Nets. Here's Jay-Z.
You see me standing here, that you know it's possible to achieve great things. And I know a lot of y'all out there ready to achieve great things. And we'll continue to do so. Don't let anybody diminish your accomplishments. It's our time now. So, I need
need every single person to put their middle finger up in the air for the people that's trying to hold me back.
Don't let them hold you back. Everybody hold your middle finger in the air. Andrew Rice, is that the message in the end? Mega businessman, and that's that.
Well, I mean, and I think this gets to the point that the second caller was making, and also James, to some degree about kind of like the degree to which Jay-Z is sort of an instrument of a larger system or has been co-opted by a larger system. I think, you know, I'm not in his head, but I think what he would argue is that, you know, in fact, he has been very much a trailblazer in the music industry in terms of figuring out ways to maintain ownership of his own creative product, of his own brand, of his own, you know, use the power of that association to get pieces of equity in companies. So, for instance, you know, when he does, you know, with the Brooklyn Nets, instead of doing a straight endorsement deal, he got a piece of the company. It was a small piece, but, you know, it was still a piece. And owning something, of course, I think Jay-Z would say is the, you know, the best way to redress these historic inequities.
Power, wealth, equity, piece of the pie. In the end, at least for now, James Pearson, maybe that's the number one message.
Listen, again, like, and I'm not into capital accumulation, but I understand how that model functions aspirationally for young people in the capitalist system. What I want is for folk to be better and more critical listeners, for his audience to push him he really needs to redress the situation with Mr. Harry Belafonte. I think it's one, it's a big rupture for me in terms of his sense of history.
Speak to the social injustice. We're up against the clock right here, James. Forgive me for that. It is a tyrant time. So grateful to you for being on today. James Braxton Peterson, Lehigh University, thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Rice with New York Magazine, thanks so much.
Thanks.
And here with Justin Timberlake, Holy Grail, from the new album Magna Carta Holy Grail, Jay-Z. He and Justin now on their Legends of the Summer tour. Thanks for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.